People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
The statistics are daunting. California has 13 of the 14 least affordable metropolitan housing markets in the nation. Currently, more than 34% of working renters pay more than half of their income toward housing. And the State Department of Housing and Community Development estimates that California needs to build 220,000 new homes a year to keep up with population growth. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing, we'll be hearing from Mark Stivers, Executive Director of the California Tax Credit Allocation Committee, also known as TCAC, which allocates tax credits to private housing developers. Prior to joining TCAC in January of 2015, Mark served the California legislature for 18 years, including 16 years as the lead housing staffer for the Senate. Mark, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you very much, Joanne. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you're 3 months now into this new role, which puts you in a perfect position to tell us what TCAC actually does and how it supports affordable housing development in California.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, we allocate state and federal low-income housing tax credits. Basically, the way that that works is that when we award a credit to a project, the developer doesn't have a lot of tax liability, so a tax credit isn't necessarily that valuable to him or her. But what they do is they partner with a corporation that does have a tax liability, and they invite that corporation to buy into the project as an owner. To do that, the corporation contributes equity to the project, roughly, you know, and there's a certain price that they pay for those tax credits, but generally it generates a lot of equity into the project. And by having equity, that makes the project feasible because you don't have to pay debt service. We can keep the rents low because we don't have to pay a monthly mortgage every year. And so the TCAC, we administer those credits. We sort of award them to projects. We have three different types of credits. There are federal, what we call 9% credits, that are a very valuable competitive resource. The amount of credits in that program is capped by the federal government. And so we hold a competition to figure out which projects get them. We also administer federal 4% tax credits, which are unlimited, and they derive from the use of tax-exempt bonds, which a sister agency of ours here in the Treasurer's Office called the Debt Limit Allocation Committee that they award. And then we also have some state low-income housing tax credits, which are also capped and competitive. So we have three different flavors of tax credits, but they're all sort of used to invite corporate equity into these projects and get to make these affordable housing projects feasible. And tax credits are pretty much just about every affordable rental housing project that we build in California these days.
Let's talk about amounts for a minute. What is the amount of tax credits that TCAC awards each year? And what are we talking about in terms of the federal low-income tax credits? Does this leverage?
Yeah. So, again, we have the three different flavors of credits. So if you think about the 9% federal credits, we talk about it as that we have about $89.3 million of federal tax credits to award this year. But in reality, those tax credits, when we award a dollar of tax credit to a project, that allows the investor to take that $1 of tax credit each year for 10 years. So in reality, instead of $89 million, we're really allocating $890 million per year, roughly, in the 9% tax credit program. The 4% tax credit program, again, they're unlimited, and so that number jumps up and down just based on the amount of demand we have in any given year. But last year, we allocated about $80 million in annual credits, which, again, is like $800 million in reality. So between the two federal programs, we're doing about $1.7 billion a year, and then we also have $94 million in state low-income housing tax credits. You add all that together, there's about $1.8 billion in tax credits that we give out in a given year. That leverages about another $2.4 billion in other types of funding, public and private funding. And that has allowed us to build basically projects with a total value of about $4.2 billion last year. So with $1.8 billion in credits, we got to $4.2 billion in investment in construction in new affordable housing or rehabilitated affordable housing units.
So about how much private equity is raised through these programs, both the state and federal programs in California?
Yeah. Well, with the federal credits, California has some of the best pricing in the country. We averaged last year about $1.05 for each dollar of tax credit. You might ask, like, why would an investor pay more than a dollar for a dollar tax credit? Well, you know, they're really investing for those income tax credits, but they also get depreciation and some other tax benefits in addition to the income tax credits. And that's why they are willing to pay more. In addition, in California, one of the reasons our pricing is so high is that banks are major investors and they will pay more for projects in Community Reinvestment Act areas so that they can get Community Reinvestment Act credit. So we see very strong pricing in California. Again, on the federal side, it's about $1.05 for each dollar of credit. For the state credits, we get less. I would say it's around 65 cents per dollar. And that's simply a function of the fact that when a corporation reduces its state tax liability, they actually owe more federal tax. And so that 65 cents is really a realization of the fact that there are federal tax consequences to buying state credits.
Mark, in what ways is California's low-income housing tax credit program different from other states' programs?
You know, I can't say that I know the other programs quite so well, being on the job here for 3 months. But I think, you know, in the one state I would say that does it a little bit differently than us, on the 9% side, they all have competitions. They sort of weight different things in terms of what are their priorities, who would win the competition. I think ours is probably a little bit more focused on like energy efficiency and some of the co-benefits of affordable housing in addition to just the affordable housing units themselves. On the one place where we're different, though, the one state that does things differently than us is New York, is using its full complement of tax-exempt bonds and 4% credits. They are basically maxing out on what they can do and that those projects that use that combination of tax-exempt bonds and 4% credits. California, along with other 48 states, is not using all of its federal resources in those two resources. And the difference is that New York is putting in a lot of gap financing. The 4% credits and bonds aren't enough of a subsidy to make a lot of projects feasible. You need some additional subsidy money from a public entity to make those projects work. New York is doing that and then therefore has been able to, you know, access all those federal credits, the 4% credits that we are leaving on the table.
Thank you. Now, I'm unclear on one thing. Both TCAC and CDLAC, if that's what it's called, the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee, they're both under the state treasurer's purview, right?
Both are administered by a three-person committee, and the state treasurer is the chair. But there are two other members, voting members of the committee, which is the state controller and the State Department of Finance. So the treasurer is not in and of himself a majority. However, because he's the chair, our offices are sort of, and administratively, we are headquarters in the treasurer's offices. But the CDLAC committee and the TCAC committee are the same members. We have the same chair, and so we really are partners in this.
And how do you collaborate on housing financing efforts?
Yeah, so when you think about that universe of projects that does use tax-exempt bonds and these 4% tax credits that derive from the use of bonds, we both are in those projects. We both are providing a financing tool to those very same projects, and that's on the functional level. That's where we collaborate. Treasurer Chung, our new treasurer, has basically come in and said, "Look, you know, he realizes these are two separate entities, but for the most part, he wants us to be a housing team." And so, CDLAC's new director, who is Jeri Glasser Hedrick, and I are just. We've been doing things together. Every time we have a policy discussion, there's really no distinction between 4% program and 9% program and CDLAC and TCAC. We're the treasurer's housing team and we work very well together in terms of coordinating our activities and just discussing things together. And sort of we both bring different skills to the job. And so we've been a perfect complement in my view.
That's great. Now, as part of the process to find solutions to, I think, what is fair to say is a state of crisis in California, you've had listening tours around the state. What have you been hearing as the repeated themes, the prevalent themes? Anything surprise you?
I don't know about surprising necessarily, and there's quite a bit of overlap, but every single session had something new come out of it, which was kind of rewarding. But I think the main things that we're trying to do is, so again, on this 4%, on the projects that use tax-exempt bonds and 4% credits, I kind of mentioned briefly that we are not using our full capacity there. And so our number one priority is how do we increase production in general, but especially on that 4% and tax-exempt bond side where we have unused resources. And, you know, I think the main themes that come out of that, there's really kind of two ways to do that, absent the gap funding that New York does, that California is not doing. But even internally, there are things that we can do through our program regulations that would, that at least at the margins, allow us to do some more production. And one is reducing any of the costs that we kind of add onto projects. You know, like I said, we have a number of ways, minimum construction standards that we have. We, you know, require certain amenities and whatnot in projects, and or at least the projects to be close to amenities, and that, you know, restricts the what properties really can you can buy and may raise the price of those particular properties. So certain things that we do that may add cost, and we're looking at those, you know, which ones are important enough that we want to keep, and which ones are ones that maybe we can relax to reduce some costs. The second thing that we can do is we can allow developers to have more basis in a project. Basis is essentially the costs of a project that are allowed for purposes of calculating the tax credit. And one of those is, for example, the developer fee. Currently, we cap the developer fee for 4% bond projects at $2.5 million per project. The development community has said, look, if you can allow us to grab a bigger developer fee that goes into basis, we can actually generate more credits. We would bring more equity into the same project if you allow us to have a bigger developer fee. Now, I mean, in essence, that is true, and that would be a good thing. It can also, if you don't do it correctly, though, however, it can add to the cost of the project and actually increase the gap. So what we would like to do is, we're looking at that very closely, of how we can allow bigger developer fees with the idea of bringing more equity into the projects without sort of requiring additional public funds in those projects.
So this is all just 3 months into the mission, and you have a lot of things that you're exploring so far.
Yeah, I mean, we came in sort of with a mandate from the treasurer to sort of just, you know, review the programs and see where we could make improvements, you know, listen to the community and hear what they have to say and see if there's good ideas out there. And we have a very sophisticated housing community. There are a lot of ideas out there and a lot of good ideas out there that we're sort of looking into. And what we have committed is, you know, sort of by the end of the year to adopt a package of regulation changes for the following years. And if we can speed that up at all, we can. But, you know, we'd like to not spend, you know, we'd like to do this thoughtfully, but, you know, move quickly as well. You know, projects are out there ready to go, and we'd like to benefit those as much as possible.
That's great. In addition to the state treasurer, the Speaker of the California Assembly, Tony Adkins, has also made affordable housing a top priority. She and Assemblymember David Chu introduced AB 35 that would increase the state's low-income housing tax credit allocation by $300 million. Going from $70 million to $370 million, and would leverage $600 million in federal low-income housing tax credits. So what would that mean for California, and specifically for TCAC?
Well, this segues perfectly with our earlier conversation. So we talked about how New York is accessing all of its tax-exempt bonds and 4% credit because they're willing to put in additional sort of financing. This bill would actually help us achieve that same goal. I think the way we're trying to structure this bill, and we've been working to some extent with the staff in the legislature, is that in addition to increasing the amount of the credit, we would increase the percentage, the credit factor in the law. So we would allow basically the state credits, a project to get 50% of its cost through the state credits. And if we were to do that, that would allow us to basically use that increase in the state credits to leverage those unused 4% and tax-exempt bond projects that right now aren't financially feasible. So we would use those extra state tax credits to fill the gap in the current 4% program, kind of like New York has done, as I mentioned. So when we think if we could, with that increase and with that change in the credit factor, we could probably do 2,000 new units per year of construction. And so we are very excited about that piece of legislation, and we are hopeful that we're watching it anxiously. And If it passes at some point this year, we will be ready to go and put those credits out as quickly as possible.
Is there much opposition to it?
I wouldn't say there's any opposition to it. The issue is one of cost. So, you know, if you increase the amount of state low-income housing tax credits by $300 million, you decrease general fund revenues by $300 million a year. So it's really a budget discussion about, you know, is that do we want to give up that $300 million in revenue each year that we would otherwise use for schools and childcare and Medicare and other types of worthy goals as well?
How to slice the pie, always the problem.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm optimistic that, you know, we've to have a speaker who's made affordable housing her number one priority is really an impressive thing. And, you know, in my experience in the legislature, speakers usually make some progress on their priorities each year. And this, she sort of targeted this as her number one priority. And so I'm optimistic, actually, that we will see some additional resources for affordable housing through the legislature this year because of that.
Yeah, the political climate in California is good for affordable housing right now. Yes.
It is. I mean, I think there's a recognition that we do have an amazing crisis here among not just, you know, homelessness and extremely low income people, but even up into the, you know, the middle income ranges. It's just that crisis, the high cost of housing in California is so outrageously expensive, and we just don't build enough. But, you know, coming up with solutions is a harder thing. And this goes partway there anyway.
And those of us with adult children who are threatening to move out of the state, you know, come on, we got to fix this so we can have grandchildren here someday, right?
Yes, exactly.
So, Mark, low-income housing tax credit programs are really good examples of public and private sector partnerships that leverage the experience and the resources of both sectors, really. As we look to the future, what other public-private partnerships exist or could be encouraged to continue to support working families in California who are struggling to meet their basic needs?
So in terms of the affordable end of the market, I'd say, you know, families who are very low income and extremely low income, and, you know, there will always need to be some sort of private and public involvement in subsidizing that type of housing. The market just is probably not able to get to that level of affordability on its own. And I think in that regard, the tax credits and the other state programs that we partner with are perfect examples of public-private partnerships. And instead of sort of reinventing the wheel and creating new models, I think I would like to, for now, focus on just, you know, more fully funding those models that we have. But I do think what I see is a sort of travesty in California is that the market serves such a small segment of the population. You think about in most states in the country, people with very moderate means can buy homes, they can rent affordable rental apartments. In California, people with modest means have a hard time doing either of those. And the housing that is being built is really going at the high end of the markets. And it's, you know, it's hard to fault the home builder community for that. If they're only able or allowed to build so many market units per year, they're going to go for the highest buyers possible. But we just underproduce housing in California so much. We really need to get to the place where the private market can build housing to serve moderate and even, you know, somewhat lower income households. And that, while that, you know, that is mostly a market function, I don't think the state government should really be subsidizing those necessarily. We need regulatorily, we really need to look at our rules and find ways to make the market more, allow the market to more easily respond to demand and build to those lower income levels.
I couldn't agree more. Mark, thanks so much for your insights today.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime.
Mark Stivers, Executive Director of the California Tax Credit Allocation Committee, TCAC, which facilitates the investment of private capital into the development of affordable rental housing through the Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program. For the latest news from Eden Housing, follow us on Twitter and Facebook. This is our 77th episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast since 2008. To download prior episodes and to receive each new show automatically, subscribe for free in iTunes on your PC or the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. To learn more, visit us at edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.